I mean, I feel such respect for the mothers in my life, and any vestige of kind of, you know, that blamey, shamey thing that I used to have to some degree, including toward myself, has really dissipated. Studying Mary for all these years really helped, because she was never a mother herself. And so I think that really helped her. She didn't have the same skin in the game. She was able to see everybody as a Buddha.
Hello, my friends. You have just heard a little piece of a wonderful interview that I'm bringing for you today in this show with an author of one of the best books that I have read this year. And stay tuned, because after the intro, I'm going to share with you how you can win a free copy of this book yourself. So let's cue the intro. Welcome to the Apparently Parent podcast. My name is Ron Katz, and I'm a clinical psychologist, a parenting counselor, and also a father. In this show, we combine the art of parenting with the science of psychology. So if you want to understand your children and yourself better, lead your family into calmer waters, and reach the end of the day with a smile on your face, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Ron Katz. All right, my friends, welcome to episode number 34 of the Apparently Parent podcast. And man, this is a good one, because I am really happy and excited to share this conversation with you. This is a conversation with Bethany Saltman. She's an author, and I'm going to present her to you in a moment, but she wrote one of the best books that I have read this year. The book is called Strange Situation, and those of you who know something about the attachment theory will immediately recognize this kind of title. And this is not a parenting book like the one you may find in the self-help or parenting or psychology sections in the bookstore. It's actually more of a memoir and a personal story of one mother trying to do her best and really get to the bottom of this thing called parenting. It's an exciting book. It's really interesting. It's moving. I loved every piece of it. And this is why I want to give you guys a copy of this book. All you need to do is be in my group, my Facebook group, which is called Navigating Parenting, Raising Secure and Confident Children. Okay, you can be at that group if you go to apparentlyparent.com/Facebook. It will take you there. All you need to do is be a member of that group and introduce yourself in a special post that I will put up for this raffle, if you will. All the details are going to be over there, and at a specific time and date, we're going to choose randomly from one of the from the members, and you can get a free copy of this book. I will send it to your house, no matter where you live. And if you really want to raise your chances to win this book, invite your friends into that group, because for every friend that will join the group and you refer, you will get one more ballot ticket, you know, thrown into this virtual box. Okay, so one more point towards you. Go to the group at apparentlyparent.com/Facebook. There's a post that describes every detail about this book and how you can win it. Invite your friends, and that's that. So now it's a good time to start this awesome conversation. Let's roll the tapes. So my guest today is an author, an award-winning editor, and a researcher. Her work was published in The New Yorker and The New York Times, as well as Atlantic Monthly and more. She's a longtime Zen student and is deeply devoted to the fine art and game-changing effects of paying attention. And I love that definition. So please let us all give a warm welcome to Bethany Saltman. Bethany, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. And every time I have someone on the show, at least in the last 6 months, I always start with asking where they are in the world and how things are over there right now.
Yeah, well, I am in upstate New York, about 2.5 hours north of New York City. And so we're in great shape. New York has really come through this pandemic with flying colors, I guess you could say, for now.
Yeah.
And my daughter just went back to school for the first time today. She'll be going 2 days a week. And we're incredibly grateful that New Yorkers have been good and strong and careful, so we can go out to restaurants, outdoor seating, and wow, see some friends. It's radical.
You're a tough breed, New Yorkers.
Yes, yes. So I'm really proud, prouder than ever to be a New Yorker.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's hope that, you know, everything is going to clear away as soon as possible in whatever way that's going to happen, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Hope and pray.
Yeah. Let's get back to some normalcy.
Let's, shall we?
Yeah. So we gathered here today to talk about your new book. It was published, if I remember correctly, 6 months ago.
April 2020.
Yeah. Yep. And it's titled Strange Situation, A Mother's Journey into the Science of Attachment. And I want to say up front to the listeners that this is not, you know, your quote-unquote parenting book, not the kind of book, the kind of advice book for parents who struggle with whatever is coming up for parenting. There's a lot of those books. Some of them are great. And this is not that kind of book. It's actually, the way I found it, it's a mixture between a really comprehensive yet down-to-earth and really understandable primer on the attachment theory, which is, by the way, kind of my baby as a psychologist and in my work. So I love that in the book. And also a beautiful memoir telling the story of several women. So there's you, Bethany. And I would even say, I thought about it, it was kind of like there are several parts of you being told in the book. And it's mainly about you becoming a mother. And there's your mother as well, and your daughter. And there's also the story of another woman, Mary Ainsworth, also known as the mother of the attachment theory. And I'm going to talk about her also in a little bit. I have a couple of questions about that. But maybe just start with, you know, sharing with us how this book came to life. It's been a long process, if I understand correctly.
Indeed. 10 years in the making. It's been over 10 years now because it's been out for a while and complete for a while. But it was a very long, sometimes treacherous book to write. Very, you know, I'm not a researcher by trade. I mean, I'm a professional researcher. I do research for other writers, but I'm not an attachment scholar. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a social worker. I'm a writer and someone who became totally compelled to understand attachment when my daughter Azalea was born 14 years ago. But first of all, I just want to say thank you for that beautiful introduction. I love the way you talked about that with all the women. It really is a story of women relating to women and kind of a matrilineage, if you will, and parts of me, absolutely. Yes, that's certainly a wonderful way to think about it. So thank you for that. And it's not a parenting book in that sense. It's not, there's no advice, there's nothing, no takeaways per se, but hopefully it's a book that will connect to parents. But like I've often said, it's not just for parents, it's for anybody who has a parent. The book is a lot about how we tell our stories and how I came to tell and then retell my story of growing up a child of the 70s in the Midwest. So just to back up when my daughter was born 14 years ago, I really loved her. I thought she was adorable. I had all those, you know, checklists of sort of squishy-hearted feelings for her. I didn't have any trouble, quote, bonding. I felt protective. I felt, you know, really adoring of her. But at the same time, I felt impatient, sometimes angry, sometimes resentful. And I really felt afraid of those feelings. And nothing could have been further from the truth. I actually became a little edgier than ever because I was tired. I was kind of understimulated, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And I was worried. I was anxious because I felt like I wasn't fitting the bill. I wasn't loving my daughter the way I was supposed to. And the irony of all ironies is that I loved her so much, I feared that I needed to protect her from myself.
Wow.
And that was a very confusing and upsetting experience.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, I looked back at my own childhood. I felt really lonely, alienated, not disconnected from my family. And I had, you know, complicated love relationships, intimacy relationships as a teenager, young adult. And I became a Zen practitioner in my late 20s because of such, basically love addiction, if you want to, you know, give it a name, mm-hmm. sex and love addiction, and was really at my wit's end. And so when I looked back at myself and my relationships, I thought, oh, I must be broken. There's something wrong with me. And as is evidenced by all of these kind of over the top relationships, my terrible academic record, my, you know, the list went on for all the reasons why I thought I must be, there must be something really wrong with me. So then I started to read about attachment as Dr. Sears talks about it. And mm-hmm. when Azalea, my daughter, was really young, and I thought, I was very rejecting of that. I thought, this cannot be right. There cannot be a checklist of behaviors that a human being needs. Like, it can't come down to whether or not I co-sleep or whether or not I wear my kid in a sling. I knew better. I liked the sling. I loved to nurse. But I felt like there was something wrong with that. And then I started to read about attachment and Mary Ainsworth's strange situation. And I started to discern, like, oh, this is different from this attachment, this so-called attachment parenting that Dr. Sears is talking about. And the more I looked into it, and the more I started to read about Mary Ainsworth and look at pictures of her online and pictures of the strange situation, something really opened in my heart. And I thought, okay, this is something I need to know more about. It's going to help me. I don't know how or why, but I need to understand more about this. And so that's when I sort of went headlong into my very amateurish study of attachment and started telling people that I was, quote, writing a book about it so that they would let me into their labs and mm-hmm. archives and trainings. And in fact, I was writing a book proposal, which is what you have to do when you write a nonfiction book. And so that's what I did for many, many years. And I finally sold the book proposal to Random House, you know, several years ago at this point. And then I spent more time writing the book, and then the book just came out.
Right. So it's been a long process of, a long pregnancy, if you will.
Indeed, indeed. And then I had the baby during COVID.
Yeah, wow.
So it's been rough.
Yeah. So you can't go on a book tour during
there
COVID,
is no book tour, which is so sad. But you know, the great news is that the paperback is coming out in April 2021. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping and praying that things will be somewhat settled by then, that I can go on a book tour and I can talk to people, and we'll see.
By the way, will there or is there an audio version?
Yes. Yes, there is.
Okay, awesome.
Yep.
So you mentioned, and this is a question that I was going to ask later, but it sounds like a nice time to go there. You mentioned Dr. Sears and his attachment parenting. Mm,
yes.
And it's a really issue. I'm not sure most of all of my listeners know the difference, and this is what is sometimes annoying for me, because I think we are on the same page around that. I when I learned about this method of attachment parenting as proposed by Dr. Sears, and I think it's also him and his wife, if I remember correctly.
Martha, yes, the nurse. He's the doctor, she's the nurse.
Yeah. And something, and coming from the field of psychology and attachment and learning about attachment theory, something didn't click for me over there. And I would like, maybe you can share a little bit more about, you know, broadly speaking,
sure,
in general terms, about, you know, the Sears attachment parenting and the difference, how is it different from what we're talking about when we're talking about attachment?
Yeah, it's so important. I can't tell you the number of times I've told people I'm studying attachment, and they say, oh, I love co-sleeping. You know, mm-hmm. he has really hijacked the term. And it's very problematic, and it's very disappointing, because the science of attachment is, if not the most, one of the most robust and creative lines of research to come out of psychology ever, certainly
I agree.
In the 20th century. And that's not my opinion. This is, you know, this is a fact. And it has nothing to do with what you do as a parent regarding your behavior insofar as, you know, your style, like I said before, slings, co-sleeping, crying it out versus sleep training. This whole thing is really a throwback to a behaviorist kind of listing of what children need.
Yeah.
And attachment, you know, the science of attachment as well as common sense tells us that there are as many ways to raise a children as there are parents, to raise children as there are parents. And, you know, 65% of human beings around the world are considered securely attached, and they certainly aren't following Dr. Sears' protocol.
Yeah.
So there's that, you know, and he actually, he and his wife, Martha, their original book before the Baby Bible came out was called, it had the word, they're conservative Christians, and their book before, the attachment, Bible came out, I believe it's called, was called, Raising a Christian Baby or something to that effect. And, you know, I have no problem with Christianity or with raising your children in that way, but it was very soon after that that they took all the Christian references out, the explicit Christian references, and replaced it with this so-called attachment business.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And so beneath his kind of liberate the baby manifesto is a very strong opinion about how a patriarchal home should run, mm-hmm. which is a woman should be connected to her baby. And he believes that it's a woman's instinct, that she's naturally more inclined in that way. He doesn't talk so much about that anymore, but I know that that's at the heart of it for him. And it's so upsetting to me that that's the case and that so many young parents, particularly young mothers, mm-hmm. get sucked into this very anti-progressive way of thinking. And then to make matters worse, attachment becomes part of that problem. And so anyway, I could talk more about that. But yeah, so Dr. Sears is public enemy number one, as far as I'm concerned. And he's really ruined attachment for many, many parents and confused people and given people the wrong impression that if they don't do things his way, their child will become, quote, unattached. As you know, we're all attached. Mm-hmm. Attachment is something that happens with our bodies. It may not be a secure attachment. It may be a troubling attachment. But our bodies are designed to attach to a caregiver the way we are designed to breathe, to digest, to be afraid, to love. So there's no way, unless, you know, in the most extreme circumstances, when a child is in an orphanage and there's zero
contact.
Yeah, zero contact. Those are such outliers. You know, these families who are worried about their children not becoming attached if they don't follow Dr. Sears to the letter, it's so, so inaccurate.
Yeah. And it really annoys me and it makes me mad when I sometimes see, you know, in Facebook groups and you know, discussions like that, people are really feeling guilty for no reason. And there's a lot of shame around that and really
absolutely.
For no reason.
Absolutely. No reason at all. No, Mary Ainsworth, her original study of attachment was in Uganda with 26 mm-hmm. mothers and their babies. And they all nursed because that's, you know, what these women did in the 50s. But they didn't all co-sleep. And they wore their babies around, but they didn't all like it. And they didn't all like breastfeeding. And in fact, one of the very few variables that she found was related to a secure attachment from her first subjects was whether or not a mother enjoyed breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where we need to be heading. That's what the science of attachment is showing us, that what matters as parents is how we feel about what we are doing, not what we're doing. And that's what our children are picking up on. And that's what gets passed down generation after generation. And that's why Dr. Sears needs to stop.
I you know, I couldn't agree more. I think this saying it like that, it's so strong. It's all about how you feel about your own parenting and how you think about your own parenting and about yourself. And
absolutely.
It's really, there's so much value and information that we bestow on our children in a non-verbal way, in through our behaviors. You know, it's almost a cliche, but it's so true that children learn more from what we do than what we say. And it's also, how we act and how we think about ourselves. And you mentioned that in the book, the concept of mentalization. And, you know, I don't remember how you put it, like defined it over there. It was, I remember highlighting it, but you know, it's about how you think about yourself and the other. And which is such a strong predictor and so important for your relationship with your child.
Exactly. Mentalization is defined as the ability to see oneself thinking. Mm-hmm. And it sounds very zen. It sounds very sort of abstract. But again, if we think about 65% of the world's population and how not everybody's going to therapy, not everybody is doing, you know, not everybody's a Zen practitioner. Not everybody is studying attachment. This is just a part of being a human being. And we get the ability to see ourselves as thinking beings from our parents who are able to do that themselves. Mm-hmm. So when we are, you know, as parents, when we are having a difficult time with our children's behavior, which makes us have a difficult time with our own behavior, right? We don't like feeling frustrated. We don't like feeling impatient. We don't like feeling angry. And then we lash out at them even more. If we can say, I'm really frustrated right now because you are, you know, you're acting like your you know, computer isn't good enough to go to school. And I know that it's fine. And that's not okay. Like, have some respect for et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But if I'm able to say, I'm really frustrated right now, my daughter is able to say to herself, oh, I see that my mom is frustrated. I'm not crazy. I'm not making this up. And it's not about me. Yeah. Even when I say, I'm frustrated at you, darling, she's able to see like, oh, my mom has her own experience. It's connected to me, but now I get to have my own experience. And guess what? We're two people having experiences together and we can enjoy each other. We can do what Mary Ainsworth called delight in each other. Mm-hmm. We can't do that if I'm not able to see my own mind and then share it with her because we're going to get so enmeshed, so preoccupied, so, you know, complicated with one each other, with one another's thinking that it's very difficult to delight in someone in that way.
And what would you say about can we learn to get better at that? You know, we're talking about the 65% that are securely attached. What about all the 35% that aren't? And so what do we do about that?
Yeah. Well, the really amazing thing about adult attachment is that the hallmark of a securely attached adult is that they value attachment. Mm-hmm. And so becoming aware of what attachment is, this mind-body system that creates a feeling of safety or lack of safety around a caregiver, just learning the basics of how attachment functions, what it is, how it feels, what kind of attachment system we have is going to create a more secure attachment.
So it's about getting to know yourself better in that way. Yeah,
exactly. We can do that by reading a book such as mine. We can do that by reading, you know, anything. And we can also do it through therapy. We can do it through meditation. We can do it through friendship, loving relationship. Just, you know, feeling safe enough to be able to explore our own experience is how we move the needle on our own adult attachment, which will then impact our children, which will impact their children, and so on.
One thing that was really interesting and fun for me to read about in your book is about Mary Ainsworth, because usually when you open a book about attachment, there's the history chapter. And everybody knows about Mary, and her story is being told. But you know, John Bowlby his story is told more. I learned more about his background, and I know how his nanny had to leave when he was 4 years old, and how is the theory became sprung from that, etc., etc. I really didn't know a lot about Mary Ainsworth until I started to read your book. And so, first of all, thank you for that. And her story,
my pleasure.
It's fascinating, and it's really fascinating to meet her through your words and you getting to know her. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how and why you chose to focus on her and her story and her words.
Sure. I mean, honestly, I just fell in love with her. And I fell in love with her grit and her questions and the fact that she was so honest. You know, when she studied with John Bowlby, when she worked with John Bowlby in London, I did the thing that everybody does. They all say she was his student and she never was his student. She got a job at Tavistock Clinic in England in the 50s, and she got a job with him. He was doing this giant study on maternal separations, and she was a psychologist, and so she got a job doing research on his team. And he was in the midst of developing his theory of attachment, and you know, based on the geese and you know how imprinting and all of that. And she thought it was total hooey. She didn't buy it at all. She admits in interviews later that she was so, quote, brainwashed by the current thinking of the day, by the Freudian understanding of how children come to love their parents through being fed by their parents, that she thought he was totally. She didn't believe it. And so when she ended up going to Uganda because her husband got a job there, she thought, well, let me pull together a research project and see if this attachment thing is real. And she instantly discovered that it was. And she loved to say that things blew her mind. And that was one of the early things that blew her mind. That before her, she saw people, children and parents who had real relationships. They had a genuine back and forth and they loved each other and it had nothing to do with who fed them. And this was a total revelation for her and began the revolution of attachment theory, because her empirical research is how Bowlby's theoretical understandings came to be so pivotal and so rigorously believed, because she then eventually developed the strange situation in order to observe and kind of test someone's type of attachment security that they have. So I just fell in love with her honesty and her rigor and the fact that she was able to go into this world in Uganda and learn enough of the language to talk to people in a matter in like a month. And the way that she talked about the people that she studied there and that she got to know was so delightful and so delighting. And she was able to see out of the wilderness of these relationships patterns. That was her gift. And that's something that I'm really drawn to. And she just inspired the heck out of me. And so I wanted to know everything there was to know about her. And it turned out that nobody had ever asked to see her records. Nobody had ever asked to see her notes. Nobody had ever asked to see her letters. I mean, actually, maybe someone had seen her letters, but her the boxes of all of her original notes and the research that she did in Baltimore and Uganda had never been seen before. I was the first person to ever ask to look
at that. So, I remember when you wrote about that in the book, and I was thinking to myself, what was it like, you know, to be in the presence of all these boxes and the documents?
It was overwhelming and very emotional. And it's something that I feel like I only just began to explore, to be honest, because, you know, I wanted to write a book about Mary Ainsworth. And that wasn't exactly the book that my publisher wanted. And I knew that that wasn't exactly the book that would get widely read. And so I knew that I wasn't in a position to really deep dive into that. And I didn't honestly really even know how, you know, like I said, I'm a professional researcher. I know how to, you know, look into something and come up and write a brief for an author and, you know, get to the heart of a certain kind of topic, but a whole supply closet full of boxes that are, you know, and I mentioned this in the book, the PDF of the strange situation notes, I believe it's like a 7,000 page PDF. And So this is a lot of material. And as someone who doesn't have a background in science and or psychology exactly, it was very, very, very overwhelming. So I had to really go deep into my intuitive sense and just look and try to feel her as much as I could, which is what I did. And I'd like to, a dream of mine is to go back with a clinician or a professional, you know, a scholar, and to be able to do more with that material, particularly the archive of all of her notes of the strange situation, and to really understand better. I did that a little bit in the book, but I'd like to know in more detail exactly how the classifications came to be, how she put this whole thing together, and the, her notes from the Baltimore study, which was the second study she did, replicating her work in Uganda.
Yeah.
The notes from that's the 7,000 page document. Those notes are incredible. I mean, she spent, you know, up to 2 weeks total looking at people.
Yeah.
Mothers and babies. And that level of detail has never been established before her or since. So it's singular. Her work is totally singular, and it's so juicy, and it's so human, and it's so heartfelt. And she was so driven with these questions of what is going on, how does this work, and what are the patterns? And she's very human in the notes also. You know, there's a lot of smoking, a lot of drinking, a lot of I see over for dinner. You know, she's very, very human in her work.
It's amazing to think that she could do this bulk of work in you know, we're talking about the 50s and the 60s, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing could be easily computerized or recorded.
Oh, yeah.
That's what a lot of work to be done. And it's so profound because it really gave life to this theory that, you know, Bowlby had the theory, but she really put it to the test and put it to practice. And
exactly.
It's still, you know, in a way that in research labs until today, these methods are used. And the research that sprung from that during the years, it's, I think, you know, I really love the attachment theory. I think it's so profound. It's the most profound psychological theory we have, and it feeds so much, not only understanding how babies are attached to their parents, but also how we as adults attach to each other in a romantic relationship, in the workspace. And it feeds a lot of my own. I'm a clinician. I'm a clinical psychologist. So I try to work as much as possible with the attachment theory, and it feeds my parenting teachings, etc. So
yeah,
and we really owe it to her taking upon her this project.
Yeah, you know, it's so true. There, she did it all by hand. You know.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know. She was so passionate, so smart, such a maverick, and so passionate about what she was doing, and so supportive of other people coming up in the field. One of the things I love reading about her was how she used to write down things that her students said so that she would never inadvertently call it her own. I mean, what a person.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me that when I studied the psychology, so you start with studying Freud and then you move to Melanie Klein, and there are many psychological and psychoanalytical theories that are named after their originator. You know, you could be a Freudian therapist or a Kleinian or even a Winnicottian, etc.
Yeah.
But the attachment theory is really a collaboration.
Such a great point.
Yeah, you're not a Bowlbyan or an Ainsworthian or whatever. Yeah.
Such a great point. Although people love to try to make those divisions.
Yeah.
Bowlby certainly wouldn't have, you know, gone for that. But I have met experts in the field who say, well, I'm a little more on the Bowlby side or a little less, you know, and I don't really know what that means. But
yeah, I guess that's kind of human nature.
It is human nature. It is human nature. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, they have one of the most, if not the most important relationship in the history of psychology.
Yeah. I stand by this, you know, this definition. I think that's really true.
Yeah, and it's very exciting.
You really took a deep dive into the theory, and you studied, and you went to meet a lot of people who are, you know, experts in the field, and you studied the AAI, the adult attachment interview. You really, you took it with both hands. And I can't refrain from asking how is the process of writing this book changed something in your relationship with the mothers in your life?
Oh, what a great question. I mean, I feel such respect for the mothers in my life, and any vestige of kind of, you know, that blamey, shamey thing that I, you know, used to have to some degree, including toward myself, has really dissipated. Studying Mary for all these years really helped, because she was never a mother herself. And so I think that really helped her. She didn't have the same skin in the game. She was able to see everybody as a Buddha. You know, she was able to see everybody as trying their best, and within a context, she would get frustrated with people for sure, men and women. But she really didn't have a, she really just wanted what was best for everybody, and she wanted to understand it. And so she really helped me develop my own position. And, you know, my own mother, for instance, she is in the book, and she doesn't always think it was the most flattering presentation. Other people tell her, Libby, you're the hero of the book. Can't you see it? And that's how I see it. I see her as the hero of the book, because not only did she raise me to be secure in the midst of all of the difficulty that I had, but she stood with me, her daughter, as I wrote this difficult book about her.
Yeah.
Now that is something to admire. And that takes a strength and a fortitude that most people don't have. And it's hard for her to see that, because she reads reviews sometimes, and, you know, they'll say things like Saltman's cold and distant mother. And she's just like, oh my God, stop saying that. But, you know, that was my experience. And we've talked a lot about it. And I said, Mom, you have to let that be true. You have to let, you know, the mixed feelings are real. And that's where our bread is going to be buttered. We have to be able to let ourselves have mixed feelings. And I'm deeply appreciative. And I did feel like you were cold and distant, and that's okay. I'm not perfect. And I've said to her, if Azalea comes back at me when she's 50 and says, Mom, you were cold and distant, I'll feel like I dodged a bullet, because that's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how compassionate you are towards that, towards her. Because it's so easy to go into this blaming spree, and yeah, nobody. Yes. There's no such thing as a perfect parenting. I think that's the title of my second episode in this podcast.
Yeah, it's true. Which doesn't mean that we don't get really, really hurt by people. We do get really hurt,
that's true.
We have to be able to say that sucked, and I'm so mad at the way my parents did X, Y, or Z, or my brothers did X, Y, or Z, or the world is doing X, Y, or Z. You know, I really worry that people will take away that I'm somehow saying that we need to be grateful, and we don't need to point the finger, and we don't need to blame. Sometimes we do need to blame. Like, you screwed up, person, and you need to be held accountable and brought to justice. Like, this is just, you know, a true fact. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that in an appropriate way that's actually going to be effective, we have to be able to absorb the whole mix of emotion. And that's the hard part. And that's where attachment security comes in. We aren't going to be effective justice seekers if we are avoidant or preoccupied.
Yeah.
It's when we're secure, when we can say, you know, the adult attachment interview shows that it doesn't matter what we report happened to us as children. We can report terrible abuse, or we can report some kind of Pollyanna, you know, perfect life. What matters as far as attachment is concerned is how we are able to hold the whole picture and tell a fair and balanced story and be coherent in our truth telling.
Yeah.
That's so that's very different from saying, oh, nobody harmed me. I mean, no way, man. Nobody gets out of this thing alive.
Yeah.
It hurts. It hurts.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that I always tell parents who I consult is that one of the hallmarks of a secure attachment is not to be a perfect and never have fights and never have, you know, disconnections. No. It's about what you do after that. It's about you as the bigger and wiser, as Balbi used to call it, to take responsibility and to close the gap and or to fix the rupture, or, you know, call it whatever you want to call it. But this is what makes the relationship secure.
For sure. But before we even can get to that, we have to do that with ourselves. And that's where my life as a Zen practitioner comes in. You know, I can't repair with my daughter or my husband until I can really repair with myself. I will never forget when my teacher, John Dottolori Roshi, who is no longer with us, we were in a question and answer session, and someone who was much older than I was at the time asked the question, and you could just feel this was from, like, this was a real question. She asked him, how can you forgive someone when they've wronged you? Mm-hmm. And he answered, forgive yourself. And it was so clear, and it stayed with me forever. I think about it all the time. You know, how can we have compassion for someone else when we can't have compassion for ourselves? And it sounds trite and it sounds cliche, but I'm here to say, you know, after spending 10 years on the science of attachment and 25 years in the science of Buddhism, that is real. That is real. Yeah. And learning how to feel our feelings for real is the way we can learn to feel affection for our children, or have the wherewithal, the love, the compassion for ourselves to be able to admit that when we're wrong to our children. It's difficult to do that because we have so many ideas that we're supposed to be bigger, stronger, kinder, wise, which means somehow perfect. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that we, you know, are out of control with our children, or, you know, it's not a anything goes approach. Yeah. It's a let's be honest with ourselves approach.
Yeah, that's so important. Thank you. You that's a lovely articulation of something that's, I think, one of the greatest fundamentals of, you know, being a parent.
Yeah.
So we're getting to the end of our discussion, and there's a question that I try to always ask people who I ring on the show. And you know, if you could go back in time and maybe have, I don't know, a cup of tea with the younger Bethany, when she was pregnant, or just after Azalea was born, what would you have said to her?
Oh my God. That makes me want to cry. What would I have said to her? You're doing a great job. You love your daughter, and just keep loving her.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and I wouldn't have known what that meant, but if someone told me that, who I trusted, I would have taken it in, which is exactly why I began studying attachment with Mary Ainsworth, because I trusted her and I knew that she wanted to tell me that.
Yeah. So That's really, really nice. And I'm letting that soak in because, it's moving. All right. So, you know, and what's next for you? Is there another project, you know, in the works, something that you can share with us?
Well, I'm actually doing a lot of book coaching now. You know, I've been in this position for a long time, working on my book and working with other people on books. So I'm open for business now, which I have been for a while, but in a much bigger, broader way, helping people create their own story, get their own stories out there. And I'm working on a novel, a totally, totally different kind of book where I don't have to do any research. And I get to work with my imagination and with just the qualities of personhood that I'm so interested in, but from a totally different point of view. So that's been really, really fun.
All right. Awesome. So, you know, I'm as I've said, I'm in the middle of reading A Strange Situation, and I really enjoy your writing. So I would love to, you know, get to know more of your writing when the novel comes.
Yay, great.
And if any of my listeners want to learn more about you or reach out to you, maybe someone needs some, you know, book coaching. How can people find you?
Well, you can go to my website, BethanySaltman.com. There's no Z in my name, just SaltMan.com. And you can learn all about the book and my book coaching. And there's I have a lot of other writing on there as well from, you know, before the book, some poems, my nonfiction essays and things like that. And I'm on Twitter, Bethany Saltman, and I'm on Instagram, Bethany_Saltman.
All right. So, and I will link to all of that in the show notes of this episode.
Yay.
And also, you were very kind to share with us, I think it was the first chapter of the book or the introduction.
First 25 pages. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, the first 25 pages. And I will put everything in the show notes for this episode. And so people could get there. And of course, I will link to the book on Amazon. And you really should get that. I really enjoy this book. I think most of the books I'm reading in the last couple of years are parenting books or psychology books and you know, professional writings. And I really think this book is a lovely mixture between a moving and beautiful story and a really good primer on the attachment theory. You really know your stuff.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from you. Yeah.
And I would just like to end with a quote that I really liked from the book. And it touched me because people who listen to me in this podcast, they know that I like to think about parenting as being a captain of a ship. And in my work, I'm trying to give people a kind of a map of how to navigate your ship because no one really teaches you how to do that. And thinking of sailing as parenting, as sailing in life, as sailing is some kind of a journey. When you keep that in mind, you'll see why I like this quote. So I'll just end with that. And it goes like this. And you're talking about your daughter and just putting it in context.
Okay.
I didn't yet know why or how it was so, but I knew that in some deep way, she and I will always be in the same boat, rowing against the same tide towards the same shore. And I love that. It really, I feel tingles reading that again.
Oh, thank you. So nice.
Yeah.
Well, this is a lovely interview for me. I must say it's so nice to talk to a psychologist, someone who's really in there with people. And instead of the book people, it's a very different conversation. It's a real pleasure for me.
Thank you. And thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. So that was my conversation with Bethany Saltman. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did as well. I want to congratulate Bethany for really writing a wonderful book, about being a parent. If you want to learn more about Bethany and her work and this book, you can go to the show notes of this episode at apparentlyparent.com/34. Okay, the numbers 34. And of course, I will link to the book and to Bethany's website. And you can also download the beginning of the book. You know, she mentioned it at the episode, the first 25 pages of the book. You can download it for free. I will put a link to do so over there. And don't forget, if you enjoy that, if this book is interesting to you, if you want to learn more about it, if you want to read it, join my group today. Go to apparentlyparent.com/Facebook. Join the group, invite your friends and tell them to mention you in the entrance questions. When you enter the group, I'm asking everyone to share where they heard about the group. So they should give you a name. And if they join the group and you refer them, you will get another point towards you and you get a higher chance of winning this book. And I will send it to wherever you live in the world, even if it's in a private island somewhere. Well, if that's the case, good for you. So I really hope you enjoyed this episode and this podcast. I really thank you for being a listener. I know that you're probably busy and taking the time to listen to this show really, really moves me when I see that this is happening. If you enjoy that, please share it with your friends and subscribe to this show if you haven't done so yet on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever, whichever platform you prefer. And I will again see you next Thursday with a fresh episode, episode number 35. Okay, so I will see you then. Until then, I will see you in the group. Bye-bye.